Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. As always, I appreciate you tuning in this week. So my motivational quote today is by Hermann Hesse, and he says, "I have always believed and still believe that whatever good or bad fortune may come our way, we can always give it meaning and transform it into something of value." So you've heard the saying, bad things happen to good people. Have you faced some form of hardship or betrayal during your lifetime? I'm guessing that the answer is, of course, yes. So I'll bet everyone tuning in today is thinking of maybe even multiple life events where bad things in your life maybe have perhaps happened. So look around at all of the anger and hardship that we're facing in our world, in the news every day. So why does it have to happen this way? Well, we're in store today for my wonderful guest, Barbara Mulvey-Little. And Barbara is a communications professional with 3 decades of experience in writing, editing, media, public relations, marketing, corporate training, community education in domestic violence, event planning, and fundraising. So she is multifaceted. Now, Barbara says, "It's taken a lifetime of trial and error to learn the most important thing I know about being human and to find joy in that." And today we're going to discuss her new book, which was absolutely amazing. It's called The Secrets Underneath. And it's a great book about healing, about relationships, and basically just about life. And I'm telling you all, you have to read this book. I couldn't put it down. I drove my husband crazy one weekend reading through it. So please help me welcome my wonderful guest, Barbara Mulvey-Little, to the show. Barb, thanks for being on again.
Oh, well, it's great to be back and see you again, Connie. And this time we actually get to see each other.
Yes, last time
we did it just on audio.
Yep. So my producer challenged me, I guess about a year ago, and said, "Yeah, we need to do video." And Barb, my reaction was, "Yeah, no, we don't." And here we are. I'm doing what she tells me to do. So needless to say.
Producers are good people.
Yeah, and it's funny because I actually have learned to love the video more, I think, because people get to see us and your body language and how I'm very expressive with my eyes and my face. So I think it gets people to know us a little better quicker. And I like that. It's more authentic. So it's kind of cool. So now last time you were on, because Barb's a regular, okay. Last time we were on, we talked about your book, Opening Hearts, which was almost a type of biography about the cardiovascular surgeon Lester Savage, right? Savage. Yes, I said that wrong. And the book was about faith, healing, you know, love, and the meaning of life. Now, the new book, The Secrets Underneath, similar in some ways, but just a story that was just fascinating and honestly couldn't put it down. So what is this book, you know, The Secrets Underneath, really about? And why did you choose this title, The Secrets Underneath? Because that was kind of cool too.
Well, the book is essentially about our choices and our power to choose how we live our lives. And I started it long before I worked with Dr. Savage, but you know, life got in the way and it kind of stayed on the back burner for a long time. And it's about the power that we have. We have the choice to choose to forgive and all the consequences that happen with that, or choose to hold on to anger and resentment and how the path that our life takes when we make that choice. And The Secrets Underneath, the title is from the idea that there are parts of us that sometimes are secret even to ourselves, and it's uncovering those secrets that help us make conscious choices. And in fact, part one, I use an epigraph for part one of the book. Part one of the book is called The Sins of the Fathers, and it's a quote by William Faulkner. It says, "The past is never dead. It's not even the past." And so what we think happened generations ago and that we're done with it and we don't need to worry about it, that's fine if we've resolved that trauma or that pain or whatever. But if you never resolve it, it doesn't go away until you transform it, as the Hermann Hesse quote that you began with says.
Yeah, it's so cool. And, you know, I think it's hard, though, Barbara, because we like our story, right? Whatever that is, that whatever that hardship is, woe's me, right? All of that. And I think that sometimes we don't know how to let go of the anger for the betrayal or whatever trauma it was. Like, how do you do that? How do you move on? So I think that the book, just the way it was written, and this is my next question. I love how you went back and forth in time. So you went the main character, current, and then things, his, people in his life of the past and the history, even before he was born and when he was born and all these things that he wouldn't even remember, yet that trauma right. was still within him. Now, the part one of the book, you quote William Faulkner, thank you for doing that, right? The past, I have that as a question. The past is never dead. It's not even the past. And then in part two, you quote Carl Jung saying, one does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. Why did you choose those two specific quotes? So thank you for sharing that. We went right into the next question.
Well, I think those are two really important concepts in living life. And I kind of noticed it because of the past that my parents had and how that affected my life as I was growing up. And as I became an adult and was trying to integrate all the different things that had happened, not only in my life, but in my parents' lives, it wasn't a matter. There was understanding. You have to come to a point of understanding. But if you want to move beyond that, you have to come to a point of an awareness in how those events shape your own life and the power that you have to choose consciously to make a different life. My parents were both raised in abusive homes. My father was in an alcoholic abusive home, and his father was violent, and my mother's family was not alcoholic, but abusive nonetheless. Both families were immigrants. And so poverty, newness in a country and all that causes stressors. And so my mother's father was also violent. And that those patterns that they had developed, they didn't pass them down to us. I married a guy who was not from an abusive family, not an alcoholic, all those good things. And I've had a great marriage, but it was There were chaotic things that were comfortable to me because that's what I was raised in, this chaos of my parents trying to make sense of their own lives and trying to move forward, but not really having the tools that they eventually gave to us. The tools that had to do with a sense of stability. And even though we moved around a lot, I knew my parents loved me with every fiber of their being, even if they couldn't necessarily do the things that were developmentally the best things for a child. And you know, my mother had, my father was an alcoholic. He stopped, well, he is once and always an alcoholic, but he stopped drinking when I was three. And so he was sober most of my life, but the effects of his alcoholic upbringing impinged on our lives. My mother's distress was so great that she had a breakdown when I was 11 years old and was hospitalized for months. And so those were very traumatic things. And I was always trying to put that into context. How do I deal with that? How do I live with that? And in watching my mother and watching her try to cope, my mother, she just died a year ago.
Oh, sorry.
And one of the things we miss most is her laugh. She had the best laugh going, and she was a wonderful mother, despite the challenges that she faced from depression and anxiety and all these other things. And I noticed in my early adulthood that when she didn't want to do something, she'd get physically ill. And it, because she had a hard time saying no. You know, people said, well, come and do this. And she'd go, okay. And then she really didn't want to do this. And so she'd get sick, and finally, she didn't like traveling a lot, and I often lived far away after I got married. My husband was in the Navy, and then we moved around for other reasons. And she would say, "I'm coming," and then she'd get sick, and she couldn't fly. And I'd say, "Mom, just say you don't want to come. You don't have to get sick." And that's when I started to look at the interplay between what goes on in our emotion and what goes on in our body. And so those two things, understanding that the past is with you until you heal it, and then understanding that you don't become conscious by, you know, just praying and looking for beings of light. You have to embrace that awareness in your own self and say, "I have a choice. I do things this way, or I can do things this way." And each have consequences. And, you know, I wouldn't judge people and say, "Oh, you didn't do that right." But the choices you make have consequences down the line.
Yeah, you just said so many things. First, they're finding research. The scientists are finding research that we are transferring memories, beliefs, whatever it is, behaviors from, they're saying, as far back as 13 generations. So, I mean, that's, you know, forever ago, right? So things that you're experiencing now in this lifetime isn't just from your parents and grandparents on them, but what happened generations beyond. So that's a lot to process and get through. Then you have your own crap from this lifetime based on parents and, right, and, you know, your grandparents growing up and what have you, and siblings and whatever else that you have to kind of, you know, sift through and get to the core. It's crazy. So what you're describing, and then I want to talk about the choices, but what you're describing is not an easy thing for people to kind of back their onion. This is deep stuff. And when you choose, I want to go back to the choice now that you said you have a choice. I think when we choose to say, "All right, I'm tired of feeling crappy, or I'm tired of feeling depressed," right, or your mom, why am I saying yes and then physically getting sick, so I can't do it. Let me just say no, and then I don't have to get sick. But you have to identify those things. It takes work and effort to do that, and that's not an easy thing either. So you have all of these. We're human, right? We're just human after all. So I think all these things play. Now, I just want to comment on the choice thing, one more component that popped into my head. I have family members. You have family members. We have friends that we know, and maybe even colleagues. They say, "Well, you know, it just happened to me. I didn't make the choice." And I often think to myself, look at not making a choice is making a choice. So even though you're allowing life to happen to you, you're making a choice to not do something. And the repercussions are the repercussions. And you said that so beautifully, that your choices have reactions and repercussions no matter what the choice, or even not no choice, presents, right? So I'm sure you've seen your life.
Yeah, I did learn that in my own life, that not making a choice was a choice, and that I couldn't blame someone then for the choice that I didn't make. If it didn't turn out the way I didn't, you know, if it didn't turn out the way I wanted. But it was in doing some of the research for this book that a lot of this information clarified in my own life, that I realized that some of the fear, I always had a problem with fear and anxiety. Some of that wasn't even mine. It was my mother's and my father's. And it's like, it does, now research is showing, it does come down in the DNA. And once I could separate out what were my real fears versus what were my mother's,
sure,
because my mom and I were super close, very similar personalities, and she was a great teacher for me, and she read constantly trying to figure out a lot of this stuff, and it just, she could integrate some, and she wasn't able to integrate other stuff. But one of the things I did recognize is that she loved with every fiber of her being, and that helped a lot. But she loved others more than she loved herself. You know, she still, from the traumas from her own childhood, she still had that sense that she wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And I think that stayed with her until she died. And it broke my heart that it did, because she was such a wonderful human being.
Yeah. And it's true. We don't see our own worth because of stuff. And that oftentimes, you're right, we don't even know what our own stuff is. So going down the rabbit hole, it could be very painful. And I commend her, Barb, for reading and then trying to heal, right? Heal whatever was going on within her. And some of the things work, some of the things didn't. Sometimes the demons are so deep and real that it's hard to address them. And a time and a place, right? That it is what it is.
Right.
We're on this journey. And sometimes this journey is hard.
And we're all on it together.
We are.
And so the things that she might not have been able to accomplish fully, and I'm sure I'm not accomplishing them fully myself. I see my children as being so much more aware at their age than I was at the similar age.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, it's an evolution, and every generation is getting a little bit stronger and more conscious if they choose. And right now we can see in our country those who are being a little more conscious than others.
True.
But at what you were saying about the 13 generations, when you think about that in our history of our country, what a difference that would make if we understood that trauma in context to what's going on now, life would be different.
Yeah, well, history repeats itself. That's what we're describing here. History repeats itself unless you do the pattern interrupt, where you make the choice to say, done. Yeah. I have to do something. I don't necessarily know what that do differently is, but I have to do something differently. This has to stop. But it's a choice. Again, it goes back. That's the thing too, Barb. I think people don't think they have the power. But you do. You have the only thing we do have control over is us, right? Me. I have control over me. I certainly don't have control over you. I want to ask you a question of the book, your background. Thank you for sharing that and you know, letting everyone know some of your history, because that some of that trauma was incorporated through the story of the book. Was the book based on anyone you know or pieces, you know?
Not really anyone. I mean, like I said, it started from a dream. And from that point, I'd already taken enough writing courses and workshops and everything to understand how to put together a story. And I spent a lot of time after I decided, oh, maybe there's a story here out of this dream. And I asked myself, what happens next? Then I had to spend a lot of time understanding who the characters were before I could start writing them, and naming them was incredibly important to me. And honestly, one of the characters I named for this gal that I had worked with one time, who was not very nice to me and ended up getting me fired. And I used her name initially, and then I thought, no, it's not going to work. And so that was a different name altogether. And that character initially in my head, as the story was formulating, was not a very sympathetic character. But the deeper I got into the story, the more I realized, oh my gosh, this is why she behaves the way she does. I was telling my husband one time, it's almost like watching a movie and just having to transcribe what I'm seeing in this movie. And so, sorry.
Oh. That's okay. Don't worry about it. So it's good.
And so the character, it's not based on anyone. It's of course, based on a compilation of experiences I've had or things that I know. Like one thing in my background, because of my parents' background, I was interested in domestic violence prevention when I was in my 30s. And so I worked in Bergen County, New Jersey, for the Alternatives to Domestic Violence. And I was a community educator. I'd go out into the high schools to explain to young teenagers what it looked like and how domestic violence starts, because it starts really young. Mm. And so all of the stuff that I have in there about domestic violence is from observing. I didn't even get to observe my dad's family much, because his parents died. His mom died on my first birthday, and his father died a couple of years later. So I didn't see that in them, but I did in my other grandparents were already divorced by the time I was a young child. But the trauma that my mother experienced and her sisters experienced from her father's abuse was really evident. But then I find out my grandfather was kind of started raising himself when he was 12 years old after his mother died, and his father ships off all the daughters to relatives and leaves the boys on the streets of Puerto Rico on their own to make it on their own. And it's like, okay, that makes sense why he's not a very loving and easy person to get around. So it none of it is anything that happened in my family or anybody I knew. They're all completely out of my imagination, but it's from experiences that I either observed or I learned about in many other ways.
And share with everybody the first scene, right? And you had a dream. The first scene is where the dream started, correct? Just share that, because, and then I want you to share your husband's reaction when you told him the dream, because that was priceless. So tell them the first scene.
Well, in the first scene, and I you know, in my dream, there are no names. I have no idea who these people are in my dream.
Sure.
But I lived in Seattle at the time, and I lived at the top of I lived on Capitol Hill, which is kind of Seattle is very similar geographically to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Lots of big hills all over the place. So I lived at the top of one. And in the dream, there's this young man walking across the street when a speeding SUV comes down and nearly runs him over. And then he goes and he saves a little boy out of this thing. And this was not an unusual conversation with my husband. And I woke up and I said, I had a really weird dream last night. And he said, yeah. And so I told him what happened. And he said, and so then what happened? I said, I don't know. It was just a dream. But from that dream, I started taking notes. I had been taking a writing workshop. I had just finished a writing workshop in which the prompt was, and then what happened? And so I sat down and I started taking some notes, and I have a big book of the different names. The characters started to come to me. The more I sat down and thought about it, the more pieces of the puzzle started going together. And I wrote it scene by scene. I mean, I didn't know where the story was going as I started. I didn't really know what the story was. But as it developed, I would write a scene, and then another idea would come, and I'd put that as a note at the end of that scene. This is where I'm going next. And so over time, the scenes all ran together, and you know, life got in the way many times. I put the book down for 2 or 3 years at a time when other things were happening.
Sure.
And interestingly enough, in that period of time, I had more experiences of death that happened in my family, and so that gave me a different perspective. I ended up working with Dr. Savage. That gave me another perspective. And so it's nothing about anybody that's really true, except for the fact that I think it could be true for somebody somewhere.
And it was funny, because I was telling Barbara before we started, I read the book, and here's the book, The Secrets Underneath. I hope you guys could see that. And I, you know, Barbara, I always read my guests' books because I just feel it makes for better interview. And so I was reading it one weekend, didn't have anything pressing going on. And I opened the book and I start reading it, and then I couldn't put it down. And every time my husband would come in, he'd say, what are you doing? I'm like, I can't put this book down. And when you describe the writing work, like when you had the dream and your husband said, and then what happened at the end, I thought, one more chapter and then I'm going to go do laundry, or one more chapter and then I'm going to go do some work, and one more chapter and then I'll go do whatever. And I was like, oh my God, then what happened? And I just kept reading and reading. And I read the book literally in just a few hours over that one weekend. And I think I emailed you, Barb, after, and said, oh my God, this is such a great book. I couldn't put it down. So and here's the cool thing. The way you wrote it, that first scene by Sean, he's a doctor, right, who almost gets hit by this SUV, ends up saving the boy, and how their lives become, they didn't even know each other. And yet how their lives become truly intertwined as the story unfolds, and even the ending, how you brought it all together was mind-blowing. It was awesome, right? So I giggled before we started the show, where you said, my husband said, well, then what happened? Because that's exactly what was happening to me as I was reading. Well, then what happened? And I had to keep reading, and I had to keep reading, because it's a beautifully written book as well, Barb. Your characterizations and how they were like, and then how they connected, you were like, no way. You know, as you're reading, I'm thinking the aid towards the end, you're thinking, no way that they're this whole connection of how the universe brings us together. And one other thing I want to comment on, Barb, you said that you put the book down and you picked it up and you put the book down and you picked it up. Probably because you needed to go through whatever it is that you needed to go through to pull the book together to make it a spectacular read as it is, because of each of those pieces of information or whatever you lived through or whatever you read or what you learned from Dr. Savage. I think all of those pieces made this book so outstanding. And is it the New York Times bestseller? Did you tell me? Is it on?
No, the book hasn't been published yet. It's in the pre-launch stage. And so I'm in the process of trying to get endorsements from people. And funny enough, here I live in Spokane, Washington now, and the book is actually in Spokane and Seattle. It's located there. And in Spokane, there's this very prominent, internationally known psychotherapist that I actually knew about because I read some of his work when my son, his name is Michael Gurian, and he wrote The Wonder of Boys. And it came out just as my son was in that age. We're going, oh, how do we, you know, I had all sisters. My husband had all sisters. My father, my mother, everybody had sisters. And I have this little boy, and I go, what do I do now? So he lives in Spokane, and the guy that printed the books for me, he did the interior design and printed the advanced reader copies or advanced review copies. He knows this guy, Michael Gurian. And so cool. I said, hey, and I'm picking up the advanced review copies, a box of books, and we're putting them in my car. And I said to him, hey, do you think you would contact Michael Gurian and see if he would endorse this book for me? And he said, sure, I'll send him an email because I don't know this guy. How am I supposed to get in touch with him? And so he did. And Mike said, sure, I'll take a look at it. And he did. And he was a few pages in, and he emails me and he said, hey, sure, I'll endorse your book. Would you read my new novel coming out and endorse that? I said, sure. So he wrote a book. His is already out. It's called The Stone Boys. And it turns out that Michael Gurian was sexually assaulted as a young boy. And so this is a novel that is partially autobiographical about his experiences being sexually abused as a young boy. Well, he couldn't know that one of the traumas in my mother's life was sexual abuse when she was 4 years old. And so that reverberated through our lives. And I'm going, oh, this is so crazy. So I'm born in New York City, live on the East Coast for a better portion of my life. Some 20 plus years ago, we moved out west. And in that time, and so what you were saying about coincidences, I think about this a lot because I was born on the East Coast and then moved out west, where my son met their spouses who are just perfect for them. And, you know, they never would have met if we hadn't moved out west. And so how could this be? How are these coincidences that happen that I was born and raised on the East Coast and ended up moving, oh gosh, I lost count, somewhere around 30 times, and met my husband on one of our times through New Jersey when I was a child. Well, I was in high school, but yes, still a child. But we started going out then, got married, moved on, and now we're out west. And I'm meeting all these people that are apparently supposed to be in my life. And so that whole idea of, you know, I honestly, Connie, I don't know how the universe works, except that
it does.
It happens the way it's. Yeah, it does.
No, I love it. I love it.
I read about quantum physics, not because I never even took physics in high school, but it's such a fascinating thing. The universe is one unitive thing, and we're all just little pieces in it. And it matters.
It matters. And that's why, you know, you and I have met and how many, you know, books I've read because of you. And I mean that in a good way, right? And then that I get to promote people like you. And it's funny, recently my husband said to me, because I read a lot during the summer, when I kind of book my guests because I'm not training with my clients because everybody's on vacation, and I read a lot. I'll read maybe a dozen to 15 books in the summer.
Nice.
And my husband said to me, how many books have you read since you started the show? And I said, I don't know. And the cool thing is these books probably wouldn't even have entered my radar had it not been for PR people and publicists, et cetera, who've connected with me to introduce me to folks like you. And the funny thing is, again, you're saying how the universe works. I remember when and we're almost out of time, but I have to tell the story because you just said that. When the owner first approached me on Web Talk to do the show, I was like, why me? He liked my vibe, right? That I was a working mom, and I had a business, and that I have this mind, body, spirit thing going on my social media. So he thought, wow, corporate meets the universe, kind of like that vibe, right? So that was kind of cool. But now, fast forward, I was doing it for a couple of months, and then the producer who was kind of coaching me, because what did I know about having a show, right? Hosting a show. And she goes, all right, you need to, it's not the Jersey show. You need to get people outside of New Jersey. And I'm like, but I don't know anybody outside of New Jersey. Like, what? So this one night, I was telling my husband this. He goes, what are you going to do? I go, I have not a clue. So here's what I'm doing. Universe, make it happen, because I don't know what to do. And with that, all of a sudden I get an email from a publicist from California who had somebody from Hawaii who wrote a book who was going to come on my show. And it was about change and all of that. So I said to my husband, I think it's happening. He said, what's happening? I go, some chick from Hawaii is going to be on my show. And this lady from California found me. And I said, how did you find me? I popped up in some PR reel or feed. I never put myself there. So when I tell you, Barb, how everything, now I've interviewed people all over the world. The show is international. What? Like, you stop and you think, how did this happen? Yeah. And my answer is, I don't know. It happens. So the book talks about these universal events, but how each step that the main character and his parents and new characters he meets current day, you know, out in Seattle, and just how it all fits together is mind blowing. And it's funny because you said, I don't know how the universe works. Yet the book talks about these kismets, these synchronicities. And the cool thing was, as I was personally reading it, I'm like, yeah, that was supposed to happen, you know, from something that happened 25 years ago in the character's life. So anybody that, a couple of things, because we're out of time, you have to read it again. The book is The Secrets Underneath, but I loved it for couple of reasons. Number one, great read, entertaining. You won't be able to put it down. Number two, if you have had trauma or just crap that you're dealing with in your life, and we all do, okay? Fabulous read, because it makes you see how when things are at their most desperate and intense, and the main character thinks he's basically losing everything, including potentially his life, and then how things start to fall into place, not only to heal him, but to make his life what he hoped it could be. And it unfolds, right, Barb? This is kind of the element of the story. So anybody that's going through any type of crap, you have to read the book, because it's a book of hope. I read it from, oh, anything is possible. So that's the other component.
Anything is possible.
And that book, I thought, eloquently, it just shared that in this great foundational story. And anybody, even if you didn't live through abuse or anything as traumatic as the young man, the main character of the book, we've all dealt with some level of trauma. I think it's a beautiful healing book as well. And I don't know whether this is what, Barb, you anticipated, but for me,
I hope.
It was wonderful.
And I do have on my website, there's a little tab under The Secrets Underneath, and I do have some resources of the books that I read on trauma that helped me focus the characters, but also some links to help for domestic violence.
Yes, which is just again, wonderful. So it's a great read, but it's a great resource of life. And it's also a great resource if you're truly going through something horrible. Again, Barb, you're like the bomb for me. You're just amazing. And I always love our time together. We're teasing. We both have curly hair, you know, from when we're kids. We have some, again, the synchronicity with us is kind of cool. Please, please check out the website. It's B like boy, M like Mary, L like Larry, bmlbooks.com. And go to the email giveaways, plural, giveaways at bmlbooks.com for some cool stuff. Again, highly recommends. The holidays are coming up. Wonderful stocking stuffer. I'm telling you, if you have a couple of days off during the holidays, you won't be able to put this down. And you never know what healing factors it might have for you. So I highly recommend the read as well. Thank you for being
on. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you for all of those little pieces of help that you do provide in the book and links and all of those things, because I think that we really are here to help people. And and the book was a good read, yes, but I think the read itself is coming from this wonderful healing perspective, which we need. We just need today. There's so much, you know, kind of angry crap going on. So thank you for that as well.
Thank you, and thanks for having me, Connie.
Always a pleasure, Barb. And I hope you guys will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together that I know change is hard, and I know sometimes the change isn't our choice, but you've got it. And I hope my guest today and her sharing her authentic story about her parents and all those things, and then the book she wrote and all of the resources we have available are all little ways that I hope I help you and my guests help you navigate whatever that change is that you're dealing with in your life. And the reality is it's probably easier than you think to navigate the change. So hopefully that helps. Also, my partner and I are still offering our free communication style assessment. Go to my other business, wisdomdecoded.com. Right on that landing page is the assessment. It takes about 5 to 10 minutes, and you get a cool report specific to how you communicate and how you show up in the world. Again, it might help you chat or navigate people in your lives that maybe are difficult for you. I think the CSA, the Communication Style Assessment, will help you with that. Barbara, thank you again. Thank you all for joining me. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. I wish you all a wonderful and inspired week. And again, go out and buy the book. I hope it helps you maybe find peace in whatever angst that you're dealing with in your life. So thanks for tuning in. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, whitmanassoc.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.